Chapter 13. Idris. I don't like the look of it. Ollie had brought up an image of the speeding broken harvest vessel. Is she armed? With hegemony ships, who the fuck knows, right? Rollo grunted an affirmative, then looked at Solis hopefully. She leant in to get a look at Ollie's display. That put her elbow in Chris's ribs and almost ended up with her stepping on Kittering. The Partheni ship was still cosy, even without the pods. Ollie was being mulish about letting Solis look, but eventually gave up, and the Partheni stared at the specs somberly. She's armed, Solis confirmed after a moment. The broken harvest ship led with a spiky eight-pointed crown, the rest of the vessel a three-lobed bulb behind it, and the hull finished in dull grey, ornamented with geometric lines in gold. I see four big accelerators, and maybe that thing in front and centre is a focusing iris for its gravitic drives. On a ship that small? Ollie demanded. Hegemony tech is good, Solis shrugged. Like I say, can't be sure.
And I'm wondering why it even matters, given they're so far ahead of us, Rollo growled.
By the time the refitted Dark Joan had cleared the planet, the Harvest's interceptor had a commanding lead.
Working on it.
Idris had the maths at his fingertips, making quick and dirty calculations upon which nobody should stake a ship worth of lives.
Almost there.
My misbegotten son, Rollo rumbled in his ear. I know you magicians do not like to let lesser mortals see how the trick is done, but maybe this one time you could show what's up your sleeve. See, right?
Any of you ever hear the term stutter jump? Idris asked them.
Oh!
Solis had, of course. Nobody else. It wasn't a thing sane people did with a gravity drive. And while he was thinking that, all the maths came together, perfect as a gemstone.
Yes, that will do nicely.
Except nicely was absolutely not the right word.
You all need to hang on to something, now. Not each other. Hang on and keep still.
Idris?
Solis actually sounded worried.
I scared a Partheni. Something to cross off the life list?
Just close your eyes and don't worry. We're going to drop out of the reel for a very short period of time.
He was mortified to discover that a tiny sliver of him was enjoying itself.
Oh, no, no, no,
Rollo started. But Idris had already set the gravitic drives into motion, shunting the ship into unspace. In the split second before they dropped, he heard everyone start to shout at him. Then the shouts were gone, and so were they. Nothing but utter quiet came from the empty space behind him, alone as he was in the little Partheni ship.
It's like a foreign country. They do things different here.
Then he was already bringing them out again, a heartbeat later. And even in that instant, he felt something flowing up from the appalling abyss to infest that vacancy his friends had left. He remembered Berlenhof. He'd been on the Partheni launch Pythoness, like the Dark Joan writ large. They'd been crippled by the architect, the surviving crew gamely discharging their weapons at the vast crystalline spears of the enemy. He'd tried to drag them away from the architect's path, feeling its invisible grasp, seeking to finish them off. In desperation, wanting to live, he had engaged the drive and just ripped the entire broken vessel into unspace. Even as he did it, he was regretting it, knowing it was a terrible idea. He tore them free, back to the reel, fully expecting to find the architect right there again, descending upon them. Except
They had been half the distance back towards Berlinhof and clear of the enemy. He'd looked about the deck of profoundly shocked women, some doubled over, others clutching their heads at the shock of sudden transit. But alive, all of them. And if he accomplished no more than that, at least he'd saved them, along with himself. Only an intermediary's innate feel for the screwed-up spatial relationships involved had made it possible. Idris was an old int now, perhaps the oldest. Old, but never tired of running. Only this time he was running towards. In the eye blink after they ceased to objectively exist in the physical universe, they were back again. The Harvest Interceptor was far behind them, still hauling its bulk across the intervening space the old-fashioned way. And ahead of them was their goal, the Vulture and its prey. From behind came a chorus of complaints, Chris choking, the staccato stridulation of Kittering making his displeasure known. Let them think on what they'd just experienced, and remember it next time they had a two-day crossing with only him awake.
"Never do that again, you famey bastard,"
Rollo hissed in his ear.
"I will cut your throat one of these fine days."
And he didn't mean it, probably, but there was still a jagged edge to the captain's voice. Possibly Rollo was one of those people who reacted spectacularly badly to unspace. Certainly, he'd always made sure he was abed before any regular transit. Idris found he didn't have room to be contrite just then. It had worked.
"We're coming in. 5 minutes. Need to be quick."
"Screw you, Idris,"
Ollie spat, voice shaking. But she was already working, trying to establish a link to the Vulture's systems.
"They're still rebooting the computer. No higher systems up yet."
There was a comms ping from the console.
"Hailing us," Idris noted.
"Say nothing,"
Rollo told him.
"Ollie, isolate the God's hatch controls. Can we blow our shipjackers out into space or something?"
"Depends if they have their wits about them. We're really doing this, are we?"
"We were never going to get our ship back without lives on our conscience, my daughter. And these murderers have signed the contract for what happens to them."
As he squinted at the displays, Rollo's face was hard as granite.
"Have they sent an umbilical down to the Omaru?" Chris asked, over Idris's shoulder. She was right. Apparently the hijackers hadn't just been sitting idle after dropping from unspace. Although what they were doing with the flayed hulk was a mystery.
"Just means they're divided, distracted."
Rollo's hand was on Idris's shoulder, painfully tight, as Idris pulled them closer. Their Brocator drive pulled them across the fabric of space, each operation slinging them along a new line as they homed in on the Vulture. All smooth sailing now, but if it came down to actual combat flying, they'd be rattled about like peas as Idris pushed past the dampener's tolerance. He felt a weird, unwelcome thrill to know that the Joan was more than capable of that kind of nonsense. He made the next grab, and the Partheni ship abruptly flipped 30 degrees from its previous course and hurtled towards their quarry. The comms requests were becoming more and more insistent, and then a whole new set of warnings lit up the board.
"They're hot," Idris called.
His memory flashed to the war, hearing the warning yelled aboard colonial warships, or the Parsef equivalent from the lips of a Partheni officer.
"Vous qui chaud?"
"Those going outside, helmets on."
Rollo followed his own advice. A few of Kittering's small arms flicked back past his crown and dragged a clear hood forwards and all the way down until it sealed over his belly. Kit and Rollo only had standard EVA suits, although they would both be going over-armed. Solis and Ollie would be the vanguard.
"You two play nice now. No time for not liking each other. I'm talking to you, my daughter. Oliantimo, to you.
Ollie looked at him rebelliously. Perhaps she'd thought her snubbing of Solace had been masterfully subtle to that point. After this, you can tell me what the hell your problem is anyway, the Partheni put in. She started back, as Rollo wrapped a gauntleted knuckle on her helm.
No lip from you, soldier. Not so long as you're part of my crew, see right?
Compris, mother, she responded automatically, and Rollo managed to chuckle.
Mother, is it? Well, someone's got to look after you, rabble of children.
Idris had been watching the Vulture's readouts, seeing the ship's energy reserves patched through to its ailing lasers. They hadn't been used much, only really intended for debris and hull cutting. They'd still make a mess of the Joan if they landed a sustained hit. The scavenger's new masters had plainly decided that no comms contact meant hostile intent. The Vulture's beam split the void, reaching them before he could even register the discharge. He had to rely on the instruments to tell him that the lance of energy had curved away, splaying off in a rainbow spectrum of wasted light and heat, as the Dark Jones' gravitic shielding deepened the curve of space just enough. He'd set his next bearing now. The drives were hurling the Joan along a heading that would bring them dangerously close to the Vulture God. The ship's laser stabbed out twice more, once piercing space where they should have been, the next just scattering away in impotent spectra. The near miss filled the space around them with colour.
I have the Vulture's hatch, Ollie reported. Isolated it. They're fighting for control.
But they didn't know the Vulture's systems like she did.
Open her up, Rollo directed.
Idris almost missed the fine mist of frozen atmosphere that vented from the Vulture's side. It shifted the ship slightly, beginning a tumbling roll, but one so slow that it barely affected his calculations at all. He almost missed the body, too, a human shape that pitched out into the death sentence of hard vacuum, helmetless, writhing briefly.
Murderous, he reminded himself.
They were professional killers and thieves, and if their prey turned on them, it was only what they should expect.
They've established an atmosphere bubble, Ollie noted,
as the surviving hijackers adjusted the Vulture's gravitic envelope. If they had any sense, they'd be suiting up, though. Nobody should be taking a congenial atmosphere for granted right now. He'd calculated his last two navigation points and put them into operation one after another. One moment, the Joan was shunting sideways, skidding through space as if to broadside the Vulture. In the next, he'd matched speed with his target, as though neither vessel was moving at all, as if they'd come to a halt alongside the Vulture God's open hatch.
Right then, Rollo said, squeezing his shoulder one more time.
Then Idris had their own umbilical free, and Ollie took control of it, clamping its magnetic mouth over the Vulture's hatch. Idris had his helmet on by then, and Chris too. They were about to match atmospheres with the Vulture, which could be venting all its air into space in the next moment.
Going!
Ollie was first through, scrambling through the umbilical, using all of the Scorpion's limbs.
Clear!
Came her voice over the comms as she reached the far end. Solace was already following, cradling Mr. Punch in her arms. Idris hoped she didn't have to use the accelerator much, because its projectiles would go through every wall and hull plate in the Vulture. That meant a lot of repair work, even in a best-case scenario. Then it was Rollo and Kit's turn to head through, and all Idris and Chris could do was wait for word of their triumphant victory. Or that was the plan. When the Hegemony Interceptor erupted from unspace, spinning end over end and broadcasting on all channels, he almost felt his heart seize. They had stutter-jumped too, right after him. How was that even possible? The hegemony had some few species that could navigate like an int, but he never expected to find any out here in service to the broken harvest. The vulture must have signalled them the moment the Joan appeared, triggering a desperate lunge through unspace to intervene. It looked as though it had cost them dearly. They were here, though, and that put the steel-toed boot into all parts of Rollo's plan.
Captain! Company!
And Idris was sending over the nav data, even as he watched the interceptor's systems come back online. Rollo was silent, still in channel, but with absolutely nothing to say. Idris told him,
I'll deal with it.
You're what?
Rollo demanded.
Idris!
Going to have to leave you for a moment. Ollie, let go of the Jones hatch controls.
Fuck me, Idris!
But she did so, and he pulled the umbilical the moment she had.
Hang on,
he told Chris. If there'd been time, he would have decanted her onto the vulture, which might have been marginally safer. He twisted to look at her. Chris was wide-eyed, but there was more than fear on her face. He remembered she was a duelist, an aficionado of the fight. He located a navigation point that tugged them away from the vulture into open space. This, even as the harvest's own pilot aimed the bigger vessel towards them. Its tumble had morphed into smooth acceleration towards their target as its weapons powered up.
Vukisho, he thought,
and returned the favour, diverting power to his ship's lasers and the accelerator's magnetic rails. Then he was reaching out into space to bring them swinging past the Amaru's twisted bulk and hurtling back towards the enemy. The enemy. He had an enemy again. He didn't like it. Loathed it, in fact. Yet an ugly little part of him was awake now, like a cold arrowhead buried deep inside his mind.
Solace had dialed her accelerator right down to minimise possible hull and component damage to the vulture. For what that was worth, given the standard of Partheni tech, even at its minimum settings, the old ship likely didn't have enough walls to stop any of her shots. When the first of the hijackers stormed into view, all on his own, she could only guess the man hadn't really understood the situation. He was suited up and carrying a bulky projectile gun. She drew Mr. Punch's muzzle across his torso and hit him with at least 7 pellets, meaning she just about cut him in half. His gun went off like an afterthought, as his body pitched one way, whilst its erstwhile contents vomited out the other. The thunderous retort would serve as polite notice to anyone else aboard that trouble had come calling. Mr. Punch, despite the name Rollo had given the weapon, made an eerie singing sound as it ramped up more of its metal projectiles. The door ahead of them slammed closed, as the Vulture's crew rushed down the short corridor from the hatch to the rest of the ship. Ollie was already in the Vulture's system, though, fighting to get control.
Kit,
the remote specialist ground between her teeth, get that airlock shut. I'm busy.
Confirmed. Yes, confirmed. The Hanny skittered backwards and took over a terminal.
Captain, take cover, Solace said, positioning herself in front of the main door. Behind me and Timo, please. Rollo, who'd obviously had dreams of leading the charge, backed off reluctantly.
Got it, Ollie said. Doors open.
Then the gravity in the corridor shut off. Someone had tried to get clever with the gravitic drive, Solace realised. A ship's artificial grav was only a specialised function of its engine, after all. Thankfully, this was what she trained for, and none of the spacers would be strangers to it either. The hijackers might just have shot themselves in the foot. Even as she thought it, the door hissed open to reveal a welcoming party on the other side. Their boots were clamped to the floor, and they probably expected to see a group of intruders in helpless freefall. What they did do right was start shooting, even as the door came up. Three projectiles struck Solace. She felt the momentum of their impact, even through the complex plastics of her combat armour. Boots fixed in place, she swayed backwards, bending at the knee to absorb the muted energy of the strikes, one hand back to push herself away from the floor.
Three hostiles, two humans, and a Hanny.
She was already aiming Mr. Punch one-handed, because she had a strong wrist, and suddenly the weight of the weapon wasn't an issue. Of course, what she hadn't factored into the situation was that she wasn't leading a squad of trained soldiers who knew not to get in each other's fields of fire. Ollie's scorpion rushed past her on the ceiling, taking up almost all the space, saw-edged tail whipping left and right. One ratcheting limb wrapped Solace's helm on the way through, slamming her back against the floor. She heard another two shots from the hijackers before the remote specialist reached them. Abruptly, the air was full of blood, 1,000 little pellets of it, each accelerating away from the man Ollie had just torn into. Solace charged up her faceplate, repelling the droplets so they spun away in every direction. The other human hijacker had a leg pinned by one of the scorpion's heavy work limbs. It looked more broken than trapped, but he also had his gun against the clear plastic of Ollie's capsule. Solace snapped off a single shot from Mr. Punch, puncturing his temple and the wall behind him.
Hope there wasn't anything essential there.
The Harvest's Hanny was retreating, sending out a wild spray of bullets from the gun clutched in its mandibles. The recoil sent the creature spinning backwards in freefall, but at the far end of the corridor, it caught itself against the wall with four or five legs and started aiming properly. Ollie was right after it, apparently believing her scorpion frame was entirely bulletproof. When she was just halfway, a lance of fire lashed across her, severing one of the frame's legs entirely. The Castigar was there, the big worm-like one, with the weapons mount hood, the one that had killed Medvig. Solace put a couple of pellets through it, but Castigar tissue was dense and unspecialised. Unlike humans, they lacked discrete vital organs. Accelerators weren't a good weapon against them. She settled for drilling her next three shots through the Hanny, sending its body spinning disjointedly into the top corner of the room. The Castigar's weapons hood swung towards her, and she braced herself for significant suit damage. Ollie was on it in the next second, the loss of one leg barely an inconvenience. There was a great blackened furrow across the scorpion's back, but she must have rooted around the damage. She grappled fiercely with the alien, trying to bring her cutting arms and tail to bear, even as it wrapped its twisting length around the scorpion and fought to aim its down weapons.
"Go get the others! I got this fucker!"
Ollie shouted, even as Rollo let out a roar of fury. Solace looked up to see a suited figure sticking its head out to see what the hell was going on. The suit was one of the vultures, but the face inside the helmet was none other than Mesmon, the Tothiats. Then he shut the door between them, abandoning his fellows. Rollo was already after him, yelling at Kit to get the door open.
"No!"
Solace shouted. They needed to give Ollie backup. Between him and Ollie, though, the captain needed her most. Solace cursed all civilians in war zones and ran after him. Once through the door, the sudden space of the drone bay caught her by surprise. She wasn't as familiar with the vulture's layout as its crew. Rollo had dived behind a tangle of pipes and was shooting at a handful of suited figures entering through the ship's remotes hatch. It was connected to the Amaru, Solace realised. This was their salvage party, hurrying back on board the Vulture. She sent a scatter of shot in that direction, pure intimidation rather than a determined attempt to kill anyone.
In response, three heavy impacts struck her like fists, lifting her from her feet and sending her cartwheeling across the bay into the wall. Rollo returned fire, though one of the pipes he'd been sheltering behind was now a jagged-edged stump. Kit, can you give me graphitic access? Her own voice was commendably calm in her ears, even as she scrabbled for purchase against the wall. She would have been a sitting target for those shooters at the hatch. Instead, Mesmon slammed physically into her. She saw two holes in his stolen suit, evidence of Rollo's marksmanship. They hadn't slowed him down at all. His mottled face, through the cracked visor, was all eerie calm. She clamped one boot to the wall for purchase and flipped him, slinging him across the drone bay. He somehow kept his orientation, leveling a hand cannon at her and hitting her with another two shots. Each bullet exploded on impact. Unarmored, she'd have been a bloody mist by now. As it was, she felt the impacts like sledgehammer blows, bruise makers every one. Her heads up was giving her all sorts of warnings about ablative tolerance and stress fractures. Partheni battle armor was good, but there were limits. So, return the favor. She leveled Mr. Punch and did her best to cut the Tothiat in half the hard way. One pellet did actually catch him in the leg as he bounced back from the wall, spoiling his return leap for her and spinning him away. She tried to track him, but he swung himself off in an unexpected direction, one hand hooking around the drone bay's empty control pod. Then he was speeding back at her from the other side, almost faster than she could register. Right little zero-G ballerina, aren't you? This time, she didn't throw him off, but grabbed him when he came in, with the full intention of breaking his neck. Contrary to popular opinion, Partheni weren't superhumanly strong. Raw muscle wasn't usually needed, except, it seemed, for brawling with renegade hegemonics. However, she had the assistance of her armor's servos and decades of muscle memory. She got a hand on his helmet and wrenched at it, yanking his head to one side. He stuck a boot to the wall behind her and used that purchase to hammer down a blow where her neck met her shoulder. Stupid infantile move. Except she felt it, and her armor's stress warnings redoubled. She felt the first worm of worry creep in through the cracks. She could see he'd hit her so hard he'd broken his own wrist, the hand bent at a crippled angle. Even as she registered his injury, the joint snapped back into place, the damage repairing itself before her eyes. Through the rents in his mangled glove, she saw skin seal and bones realign, even as he came in to hit her again. Need to update our database on Tothiat. She gave the servos all the reserve power the armor had, went for his neck, and felt something give with a satisfactory snap. When his next monstrous blow came in, she realized she'd actually heard the seal of his helmet give way. It came away in her hand, leaving his face pressed right up close to her own visor. His next blow was too much for his boots' magnetic seals, and he fell away from her, leveling his gun. She threw his own helmet at him, bouncing it off his forehead. Gravity any time now, Kit? Working, 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 in her ear from the Hanny. Mesmon's next shot blew a hole in the wall past her helmet, the propulsion sending him rocketing away from her across the room. Grimly, she lined up Mr. Punch and put a dozen pellets in him before he could change his course. The force spun him around three times, leaving a spiral of holes all over his body before it bounced him off three walls. And now to end the others, she thought, because surely they'd done for Rollo already,
and would be coming for her next. Yet Rollo was still over by the pipes, exchanging inaccurate fire with two hijackers, while a third brought something up out of the Amaru. The gangster was handling his find as gingerly as though it were a bomb rigged to blow. The other thugs moved to cover him. Despite all the fighting around them, apparently this was their priority. Then Mesmon was back, notwithstanding all the holes in his hide, and she realized she had a bigger problem herself. Idris.
Chris, Idris said, there's a fold-out seat behind mine. Get it out, strap in.
She was already on it as she asked, what now?
I'm going to push the tolerance of the ship's dampeners. I don't want you thrown around.
He had the grabby drive reaching out for the universe again, dragging them at a tangent to the Harvest Interceptor, which was lurching towards them in turn.
Let's see what you've got.
He fired their accelerators towards the Harvest craft, burning through 100 fist-sized pellets from the magazine, each one spun up to a speed beyond the dreams of ballistics. Their opponent was already using its drive to bend space about the vessel, so that every shot, still going subjectively straight, just swerved away. So far, so much as expected. Then the return fire was incoming, trying to track the fleet little Partheni package runner as Idris threw it through a series of abrupt changes of heading. You couldn't dodge something as fast as an accelerated round, any more than you could see a laser before it hit. But you could well and truly mess with your opponent's targeting. Plus, the void was very big, and the Dark Joan was a very small target. Idris had his own gravitic drive twisting space too, so the handful of shots that came near slingshotted around the Joan and were lost to the abyss. By that time, he'd closed with the interceptor on a jagged course, and the interceptor's salvos continued to land everywhere the Joan wasn't, Idris's deft hands feeding calculations to the ship. There were gaps in their enemies' firing too. He wasn't sure why, but his mind picked up the discontinuity.
Why not shoot back just then? Why that half a second when their guns cut out? Malfunction or strategy?
He brought them closer yet, reaching out with the Brocator to snag the universe and yank the Dark Joan in. Close was relative, but 100 kilometres meant near neighbours in space. His laser flicked out, and he unloaded another burst from the ship's accelerators, the high, whining vibration of the weapons coming to him through the hull. The Harvest ship tried to match him, manoeuvre for manoeuvre, but its drive-to-mass ratio was far more mass than drive, and he buzzed it like a fly. The Partheni console helpfully picked out all its arcs of fire, and he chased the blind spots as it rolled and lurched, then dropped suddenly away, trying to get him in range again. A moment later, he was too close, and the gravitic fields that had been fending off his attacks were clashing with his own. The whole fabric of the Dark Joan shuddered, and for a moment, he lost control over where they were relative to the other ship. He'd almost calculated a solution when the interceptor's pilot reconfigured their gravitic field and sent the Joan hurtling away like a cork from a bottle. The interceptor itself was punted in the opposite direction by Newton's inescapable boot. Partheni ships had what Idris thought of as a panic pedal to generate emergency shielding. It flipped all the gravitic drive's resources towards defence, and he stomped on it then, almost closing his eyes, as he waited for the Joan to take a hit. Then, a kilometre of space around them was coursing with the angry metal bees of accelerator shot.
The missiles flowered away from them in a perfect rosette as the Jones drives took the gravitational gradient of space-time and hauled on it like a sheet. The lethal barrage of fire fell away from them, raindrops down a window. Except the window was the universe, and down was in every direction. Something hit them like a slap, making the inside of the Joan boom hollowly. Chris yelped, and for a moment Idris thought she'd been hit. But this was no laser, no punching railgun round. She was just demanding to know, what the fuck? Because she'd never been on the wrong end of a gravity hammer before.
I guess they do have one then.
He really hadn't quite believed it, because serious gravitic weapons were for Partheni battleships and other big-ass militaria. But that was humanity. Apparently the hegemony were just giving the damn things away, even to their apostate gangsters. That had been a near miss, the interceptor's hammer striking the space the Joan was just vacating. Idris was still using the drive to ripple their gravitic shielding, eeling through the storm of shot the interceptor was sending their way. Their shielding couldn't take the concentrated gravitic force of a closer strike. Even another near miss might just flatten the spatial contours all around them, leaving them a sitting duck in a mathematically predictable volume of space. The harvest almost had them in the next second. Idris had the sense of being arrested in mid-leap, suddenly stationary, so the dampeners struggled, and he and Chris were both rammed sideways in their seats. A moment later, they were out of it and on the move. Again, the interceptor had missed its big chance to turn them into confetti.
Same thing. Why stop then? What's the deal?
He let the back of his mind chew at it, as he had the grabby drive sling them about a bit. Once more, he tried to exploit their blind spots, or at least minimise their attackers' lines of fire as they dodged.
The Imaru! Chris shouted.
What?
That part of his mind they'd monkeyed with, to make him an int, was warning him that the gravity hammer was crushing space along their path, like a raging imbecile chasing a fly.
They don't!
Chris whooped again as the whole ship shuddered and groaned around them.
Want to hit the Imaru!
It seemed ridiculous, because something had already hit the Imaru with extreme prejudice. But Chris was absolutely right. The gaps in enemy fire occurred when that great scatter of accelerator rounds might catch the ruined freighter.
Worried about their friends on the Vulture.
But would that really warrant sending a near-as-damn-it warship after them via a dangerous in-system jump?
What's so bloody valuable to them?
Then the gravity hammer came down. He had a moment to appreciate that he'd screwed up and they were well and truly dead. Then he realised that he shouldn't have been allowed that moment. And now, two such moments later, he was still alive. The Jones damage console was lit up like it was some kind of Partheni festival, but they were still there, and the ship was responding to his commands.
Segmentation.
It was Partheni tech, developed at the end of the war. It had been brand new at Berlinhof, expensive as hell, and you had to build your entire ship around it. He remembered the Pythoness as it had come in towards the architect, a mere moat in the face of that jagged crystal landscape. All around them, other ships had been flayed away. The unseen hands of the enemy's gravitic fields had found them and sculpted them into tatters and flowers and murderous origami. One of his int classmates, in a ship up ahead, had been snuffed out into nothing. Just gone into loose molecules and tormented strings of organic material. Then, the Pythoness had fallen under the architect's gravity field too. But the new tech had saved them, shunting the clenching force of the strike right down its segmented hull, focusing and concentrating that force until... Until now, the Dark Jones slipped from the interceptor's grasp like a lizard, leaving only its tail behind. The last 5 meters of the ship were just gone, sheared off and crushed into a knot of metal and plastic by the deflected force of the hammer's blow. But they were clear, and very close. He ran his calculations swiftly, taking into account Chris's revelation. He could unleash both the Jones laser and accelerators, then dart from blind spot to blind spot. He'd head for the point where all three ships lined up like a conjunction. The interceptor pilot was pulling its ship round now to catch them in its field of fire. He felt the judder as their graphitic shielding clashed against his own a second time. This time, it was expected. All figured into his calculations. Lessons from Berlinhoff again. Idris had been at ground zero, watching the Heaven's Sword crew play tag with the architect. Their vast battleship was no more than an insect in the face of this enemy, as they calculated its hundreds of conflicting attempts to maul space around them. And the Heaven's Sword had gone down, of course. But this time would be different. Idris hit a blind spot, and the interceptor rolled away just as he'd foreseen. He already had the Jones accelerators running hot, his barrage of fire whirled harmlessly away by the gravitic torsion of the other ship's shield. Another blind spot. And now Idris wasn't shielding, but reaching out, predicting the defensive configurations of the enemy's shielding and matching them. He aligned the ships, reorienting the Joan to find a new down. The ship rolled uncomfortably around him and Chris as he brought them swinging far too close to the enemy's hull. He'd seen Partheni Zero fighters do exactly the same as a swarm to bring their weapons to bear on larger targets. He was no Zero pilot, but then this wasn't the war. Make do and mend. The Dark Joan darted past the interceptor, heading into deep space. Next instant, the grabby drive had yanked it back, still yoked to the shifting graphitic fields of its target. Then came the moment he'd been waiting for. That heartbeat of stillness, when the enemy weapons stopped to avoid raking hellfire across the Amaru's warped hull. Even though the wreck was nothing more than a glinting dot a world away. Idris unloaded everything they had, chewing up the Jones' own mass for ammo, emptying the laser's power reserves. He used the shuddering flex of the interceptor's own gravitic field so that, when the enemy tried to twist the Jones' attacks away, it took them into its heart instead, embraced them to its bosom like a lover. He saw their reaction drives blow first, then their remaining fuel reserves, a constantly extinguishing fire venting out into the hunger of space. Abruptly, the interceptor was spinning, turned from an arrow to a twirling baton by the force of the explosion. The Jones' twin accelerators raked the length of the ship 3 times, automatically tracking along its length for as long as he maintained fire. His panel reported 307 discrete hits, like a proud child with a test score. But Idris was pulling away from the damaged ship, feeling abruptly sick at the surge of triumph he'd felt, the savage joy. For him, adrenaline went sour quickly. He located the Amaru and checked the Vulture was still attached. Then he scudded the Joan across the intervening kilometres at the ship's best speed, because the others would need him. Solace. Mesmon slammed a fist into Solace's helmet, hard enough to spatter her visor with his own blood, a resource of which he seemed to have an infinite supply. She grabbed him under his arms and tried to throw him away from her, but he held on, and they ended up kicking away from the wall, crashing straight into the knot of his confederates. They were all human, lightly suited for EVA duties and sheltering whatever they'd brought up from the Amaru with their bodies. Her armoured knees rammed one in the back, hard enough to gash his suit. Another decided to get in on the action, grabbing her arm and giving the whole awkward tangle that was Solas Mesmon a completely new spin. Solas gave the man a murderous glare and drove her fingers ramrod straight into his throat. She felt the thin suit material flex, and then he was jerking away, kicking and strangling in midair, wrestling futilely with his helmet. She tried the same with Mesmon, missing his neck, but jamming a finger in his eye. At least it seemed to pain him, though nothing stopped the Tothiat. Then she had revolved to see the two remaining clowns by the drone hatch again, and they were pointing guns at her, trying for a clear shot. Rollo popped up and shot one dead, which served to distract his friend, who, Solas now noticed, had a rather heavier weapon. It was a big laser, a cutting tool converted for anti-personnel use, and the man blazed it around at Rollo. Solas caught her breath as it made a slaggy mess of the wall and pipes. The captain himself was an old zero-G hand, though, pushing off before the beam's wielder dragged it round to him. A second later, he sent enough bullets towards his enemy to drive the man into cover. Then Kit chirped in Solas's ear. "Access, go, go, go!" Mesmon put a rock-shattering blow into her side, but she hardly noticed, because she was no longer at the mercy of Newtonian physics. Gravity was back, and everything slammed into the floor. Everything except her. Solas had her wings again. The drone bay was an instant mess of crates, bodies, blood, and beads of molten metal, all of it abruptly remembering what down meant. She saw Rollo crunch onto one knee and twist over, cursing. The laser wielder lunged for the little box they'd retrieved, only to fall back as a shot from the captain scored the floor nearby. Mesmon had fallen, landing on his ass without dignity, then looking up to see the angel of the Parthenon descending on him with righteous fury. The shoulders of her armour boasted gravity handles. Ollie's scorpion had something similar. They let Solas ride the gravity fields, inside or outside a ship. They let her, in this specific circumstance, kick Mesmon very hard in the head, sending him hurtling backwards along the floor, with his neck at an unnatural angle. She pursued, not at all surprised to see Mesmon's head snap back into place, sporting a bloody-minded expression. He scrabbled for a gun, but she knocked it from his hand and swung up to the ceiling to avoid his lunge. Then she flipped upside down to hit him in the neck, the jaw, the temple, pushing to see what his boosted physiology could endure. There must be limits to his healing, to the sheer energy his hybrid system could muster. Finally, Solas darted back again and shot at him with Mr. Punch, virtually amputating one leg and scattering a handful of punctures across the rest of him. Mesmon went down. The leg, despite all the tear along the dotted line work she'd just done, remained attached. And already, she could see the fibres and ropes of his muscles knotting together like a nest of snakes. Still, he was down and obviously in pain. She'd just have to see how many parts were too many when it came to him reassembling himself, and whether his head would still curse her once she'd separated it from his shoulders. The laser caught her as she swooped down on the Tothiat, and her entire world dissolved into danger warnings and error messages. Solis aborted the attack instantly, using the gravity handles to scrabble backwards through the air, bobbing erratically. She had lost all the servos down one side, the plates of her armour half melted together by the heat. There was also a great deal of pain and blistered skin on the inside. But you could only heal from that if someone didn't kill you first, so she put it out of her mind. She swung around, trying to manage Mr. Punch one-handed, trying to find her new enemy. She found him, just as he rammed a new cell into his exhausted laser and levelled it at her, faceless behind his visor. Damn, she thought, and Rollo shot him, shattering that plastic mask and sending the man pitching backwards. Mesmon was already on his feet. She could barely believe it. She could also barely believe that the hegemony hadn't just put 20 Tothiat together and taken over the goddamn universe by now. But maybe they were all inveterate criminals who only obeyed orders when it let them break laws. She brought up her damage control. So much damage. She was half paralysed inside the crippled armour, and if she somehow got it off, then her training wouldn't be enough to beat him. The two of them faced off, or the three of them, including Rollo. But Rollo and his little gun weren't a big feature of this conflict. He'd have to practically force-feed Mesmon the barrel to make much of an impression. Then Ollie erupted into the drone bay, still fighting the lashing, coiling length of the Castigar. There were two more laser scars across the scorpion's metal hide, and the worm-like bulk of the alien was gashed and ragged. It left a smear of black ichor across the plates of the floor. Even as the pair of them burst onto the scene, the Castigar's head-mounted weapon spoke again, spraying the room with a scatter of bullets and scribbling nonsense across the far wall with its energy beam. Then Ollie finally secured a cutting claw about the head mount and ripped it off, taking a chunk of the creature's head with it. The clutch of tentacles still attached to the creature writhed in a frenzy, and its length whipped madly back and forth. Mesmon was slammed one way and Solace the other. The thrashing was pure reflex by then, and mostly post-mortem. Warrior Castigar died hard, but they still died. Unlike Tothiat, apparently, because Mesmon was scrambling up the scorpion like a monkey, making straight for the cracked capsule that held Ollie. One of her smaller arms snagged at his tattered EVA suit, and he ripped the limb off in one smooth motion. Solace levelled Mr. Punch, but with only one fully functional arm, the chance of shooting Ollie was too high. Instead, she scrabbled against the gravity field and just flung herself at the Tothiat. Half her body was locked rigid, yet she could still pilot herself about like a remote, using her gravity handles. Mesmon was straddling Ollie's capsule, one hand cocked back to strike, when she cannoned into him. She almost tore him loose altogether and got her working glove about his head, digging her fingers into his flesh as hard as she could. With a snarl, he took her wrist and tried to break it one-handed, but he couldn't quite get enough purchase. Instead, he just jerked at her arm, pulling hard enough to slam her into the nearest wall. Simultaneously, he drove his other elbow into Ollie's clear plastic screen, cracking it into a webwork of crazed lines. Inside, the remote specialist's face was ashen, horrified. Solace was fighting to recover control of her own armour, so she missed the moment when Rollo vaulted up and put his pistol to Mesmon's chest, opening a fist-sized hole. The Tothiat slammed back, one hand still hooked about the latch of Ollie's lid. For just a second, Solace thought that was that. They'd finally breached the tolerance of the man's alien resilience. There was hardly any blood, though, and Mesmon arched forwards, keening loud enough for Solace to hear even over the yelling of her armour's alarms. He abandoned Ollie and threw himself on Rollo, knocking the man's gun aside and smashing him across the head. The blow was hard enough to break the captain's neck and visibly deform his skull. Solace's own cry almost deafened her, and it covered Ollie's shriek. A moment later, the scorpion had three different limbs on Mesmon, driving claws and clamps into his flesh. She was pulling him taut between them, as though she was going to tear him into thirds. And perhaps she would have done. But he wouldn't come apart. Solace could see the frame's servos straining, arms juddering and whining as they tried to maintain their grisly tension. Then, both doors of the drone bay airlock were grinding open to reveal a short umbilical, the one that connected the vulture to the flayed airless sculpture of the Amaru. Immediately, the atmosphere started screaming out into the tunnel. Solace began skidding towards the open hatch, resisting with her gravity handles, because she just didn't have enough working limbs to do it any other way. What she did manage to do was swing herself, so that she had one foot on Rollo's body, even as Mesmon's dead compatriot spun or rolled past. They ragdolled bonelessly down the umbilical, into the open wound that was the Amaru, before being sucked out into the wider universe. "Kit!" she shouted, not even sure her comms were working. "Repair the envelope! Kittering!" Something skidded past her as she tried to maintain her position. It was a plain metal box, but some part of her remembered its provenance, and she grabbed it with her working hand. The thing Harvest had brought up from the Amaru. The answer to why Rollo had lost his ship. And his life. Something important. Worth killing and dying for. Then the hatch was fully open, and Ollie went through. Solace had been thinking of this development as another attack by Broken Harvest people. Perhaps another troop of suited goons were coming up from the wreck. But Ollie had control of the drone bay, and she was going to do for Mesmon one way or another. Clinging to the rim of the open hatch with the scorpion's 4 feet, she thrust him out into the vacuum. Solace stared, waiting, seeing ice form in the Tothiat's eyes and at the corners of his mouth, as well as across the cracks in Ollie's capsule. He wasn't dying, though. He deliberately wrenched one of his arms free of the clamp that held it, leaving plenty of suit and flesh behind. In vacuum, his substance flared out in a mess of sticky strings before knitting back together. Ollie shook him, holding him with just one claw now. Staring at her, through the ice, Mesmon dug his fingers into the metal of her arm, twisting it. He wasn't going anywhere, Solace thought. Then he was crawling up Ollie's arm towards her, tearing himself from her pincer grip an inch at a time. "I'm coming!" Solace shouted into the comm, but Ollie snapped back, "No need!" and detonated something at the scorpion's shoulder joint, shooting the arm and its burden outwards, away into the void. Solace lost sight of Mesmon's face very quickly, but she hoped he was fucking livid about this. Ollie stayed at the hatch, watching to make sure he wasn't able to snag any part of the Amaru. From her satisfied look, apparently he wasn't. Then she drew back in and shut the hatch, and the vulture god's much-abused atmosphere processors began to take up the slack. Wordlessly, she stomped over to Rollo's body, her frame sparking and shuddering with the damage it had taken. Soon after, Kittering came pattering in, stopping dead when he saw his captain. A little after that, Solace caught Idris's signal. The Harvest's interceptor was out of the fight. By then, Kit had secured the Amaru to the Vulture, and made space for Idris to dock the Joan and come aboard with Chris, so he could get both ships out of there, so he could hear the bad news. As Idris ran through a scatter of hurried system checks, Solis handed the little box over to Ollie so she could prize it open. She had a burning need to know what was inside. It had cost them enough. "It'll be nothing," she thought. "It'll be drugs, gems, some stupid thing a crime lord would sacrifice his minions to secure, and get good people killed in the bargain. It'll do nothing but highlight our pointless losses." Then Ollie tripped the mechanism at last, and they all stared down at the contents. They really weren't drugs or gems or any other stupid things. They were either fakes, or they were holding the fate of worlds in their hands.